Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. We're coming to you today from the Utah State Capitol in Senator Dan McKay's office. Senator,
hey,
nice
everybody.
To be with you.
Sorry, I keep jumping the gun on my greeting.
You're on the right, and we are in the right office here on Capitol Hill. Dan's got a beehive flag, a Utah State flag, a U.S. flag, and otherwise just a pile of papers in your
just
office.
Just a pile of papers. It's really, really quite the, amazing place to be.
On the political left, but to Dan's right is Shireen Gourbani. Hi, Shireen.
Hey, and hey to the listeners.
We are excited to bring you political news today, and I want to start in the Beltway and talk about our senior Senator Mike Lee, our junior Senator Mitt Romney. Shireen, which one do you think is more relevant right now?
Well, Mitt Romney is certainly the more relevant senator at this point. I think it's going to be hard for Mike Lee to really have any space of relevance with very little clear agenda other than just saying no to many things. Mm-hmm. Mitt Romney seems like he's really interested in coming to the table, trying to be a bridge, really trying to work for the good of the American people right now.
Dan, love to hear your take on it, but let's just think about this. So Senator Romney has been in the group that's been negotiating this Republican stimulus proposal. It's $618 billion as opposed to $1.9 trillion. So it's a much smaller amount, but yeah. He is the voice of, you know, a more targeted, a more reduced stimulus that is going to still help us. I think that's a good thing for our state that we've got a voice in there.
Well, it will be really interesting to see, you know, what else gets added to the bill.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, they're talking about, you know, dramatic public lands changes. They're talking about a bunch of things that they're scooping into the bill, right?
I'm shaking my head as Dan looks at me. You shouldn't do that in a pandemic.
You should not do it in a pandemic. You shouldn't do it in a spending bill. You shouldn't do it during reconciliation, which is against the rules for reconciliation of the U.S. Senate. But the U.S. House and their process. But guess what? You only need 51 votes to overcome a reconciliation objection. And so guess what? As the president informed Mitt Romney and as he informed the committee, you know, that came to meet with him, it was, you know, more productive probably than sitting in an ice cream shop and yelling at somebody about politics. But at the same time,
you're not optimistic.
I am not optimistic.
You think a $1.9 trillion spending bill will pass?
Yes.
Coronavirus relief bill.
Yes.
And our
with Christmas trees underneath it for all of the pension funds.
But to be clear, there are some real differences. And some of the things that have come forward in Romney's proposal that are pretty different are a big step apart. So the Biden plan is $170 billion to safely reopen schools and universities. The plan that Romney is supporting is $20 billion. Uh-huh. That's a huge difference when we're thinking about how many kids we're trying to get back into schools. When we think about the increase in resources to SNAP homeless services, which is a community that's very hard to navigate with cohabitation and the way that individuals who are unhoused are living, there's a lot of really important things in the Biden plan that are not in what Romney's counter proposal
and yet,
is.
Utah has found a way to successfully do all of those things without the federal government's money or without major, massive new debt or spending. And so the rest of those other states who have refused to get their kids back in school to the detriment of those kids, right? They have refused to spend the money that they've received to this date. And now they're looking for additional cash infusion when Utah was able to do it without that type of cash infusion. I would just ask those other states, follow Utah's example and do it the right way and do it already.
Dan and Shireen, we're going to get some more of that in the months to come because there are some things where Utah's on the forward agenda, doing really well. Come back to where I started, though. What do you think Senator Lee's doing right now to help Utahns deal with the coronavirus? If you've got Mitt Romney meeting at the White House, if you've got Mitt Romney, he called out Marjorie Taylor Greene, a name that everybody's going to become familiar with.
But has nothing to do with coronavirus. Your question
or maybe Utah.
Your question is, what is Mike Lee doing with coronavirus? I guarantee the same exact thing that Mitt Romney and Chuck Schumer and Mitch McConnell, it's the same exact thing. They're all trying to figure out how do we get vaccines to more people, those kinds of things. But honestly, that's mostly CDC and a staff situation where they then come back. The senators are all being staffed and being told what's going on.
Yeah.
But they ain't doing a doggone thing.
Shireen, do you agree with Dan that this Marjorie Taylor Greene thing isn't really a productive place for like a Senator Romney to be right now? He told that she's promoted the big lie.
Yeah.
She's also someone who has said that these shootings you know, at Parkland and Sandy Hook were not real.
Yeah. So she is has a long record of deeply racist, anti-Semitic things that she has said. There's
a lot of it's on film.
A lot of it is on film. Yeah. It's a deeply concerning, I think, element of the party. And I think what I am perceiving from Mitt Romney is that Senator Romney is very concerned about what the future of the Republican Party looks like. The fact that more people are talking about Marjorie Taylor Greene than they are talking about Mike Lee or Senator Romney or anybody else is a problem for the party.
Even Marco Rubio or some of these people, you know, are going to be in for running for president again.
Right.
We're talking about Marjorie Taylor Greene. Dan, I didn't tell you I was going to do this, but what do you see as either the remake of the Republican Party, or do you think that that's an unfair question on my part? Because from my vantage point, we have a party that has completely left its intellectual base of, you know, limited government, free enterprise, you know, less regulation.
Oh, you're
open market.
I thought you were talking about the Democrats. Yeah.
No.
Okay.
No,
interesting.
No.
Oh, you're talking about
the
Republicans.
So when I think of the Republican Party right now, I don't think they know who they are.
Well, I certainly know that that's always hard to ask answer after an election, right? So if we look at Marjorie Taylor Greene and the issues that she brings up, if you're a party that narrowly loses an election and you decide to expel a portion of your population or a portion of your base, that might not necessarily be productive in the next election, but it might be productive long term.
How big do you think that base is?
Oh, if it's 10%, like let's just say it's 10%, that's big enough. It could be 5% and it's big enough.
How does it have that much power? I was thinking it's like a third.
Well, okay, let's say it's a third. That's even worse, right?
Yeah.
If you're talking about, I'm just talking about pure population, right? You're trying to manage to the masses. And what I will tell you is that if the House Republicans decide that they're going to alienate or exclude, you know, Marjorie Taylor Greene from a committee because of things that she said or her past feelings, I will just say her constituency that voted for her and elected her to office, and it was an overwhelming result, right? I think it was over 60%, right? She had an overwhelming result, and they knew all that stuff going in. You cannot kick somebody out despite what their constituency says. Like, that is inappropriate behavior, despite the fact that you may not agree with them.
They call it the people's house because it turns over every 2 years.
Yeah.
And so in this case, I am grateful for that because I hope those voters will reconsider. Shereen, we have Representative Burgess Owens, who now accepts Joe Biden as president, and he's apologized to people of your party,
progressive liberals,
however you want to characterize yourself.
But you got an
apology.
Yeah, I think he probably should have apologized to democracy. I think what was happening was a bigger issue than just offending.
Democracy didn't take his call.
Offending Democrats.
So when he called democracy, she didn't answer.
So the idea is that what was happening was a big lie was being perpetuated, and he was part of that. I don't think apologizing to liberals covers that. I think it's more about, do you have the real fortitude to do your job to uphold the Constitution or not?
Yeah. Dan,
typical liberal, like, you can apologize to them, but they're still going to be offended. And you can never actually build a bridge with them because they're too busy lighting you on fire after you've apologized.
We don't live in places with bridges.
Did the apology come on Capitol Hill? Was it during his visit here to the Capitol that he issued that?
So.
Were you
I
in,
think
the
it was during, I think
in the
it,
room?
No, I think it was to either the Senate or the House Minority Caucus.
You've been getting visits from our congressional delegation. Did you get Senator Romney?
Senator Romney.
Who else have you had
here yesterday? So we had Blake Moore, Congressman Moore.
Youngest. I heard that he's the youngest member of Congress.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah, great.
I'd love listeners to go ahead and check me on that.
Yeah, I hadn't heard that. I know he's young. I hadn't looked at his age. And so we've had him, Senator Romney. I know Senator Lee will still come. I think we'll still hear from the others as well. So, and then Burgess Owens has been here. So we have two more to go.
When they come on the Hill, are they showing a lot of respect, a lot of deference? People attend.
Oh, yeah.
What is that like?
So far, Mitt Romney is the only one that hasn't attended in person. The others have all attended live and in person, you know, safely distance and mass.
Yeah.
I
wonder if he's afraid of a super spreader up here.
Well,
always am.
Maybe, but Senator Romney is older. He's over 70, despite his young whippersnapperish approach or appearance. So, you know, maybe he's more concerned.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Blake Moore may be the youngest Republican. I don't know, but there are younger Democrats.
Got it. Okay. the fact checker and Shereen. Hey, in our next segment, let's talk about what's going on in Capitol Hill. Lots of bills, lots of interest, lots of energy, and some things that are of concern. So join with me, Dan McKay, Shereen Gurbani, and Natalie Gochner in our next segment.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider donating to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
Shereen Gurbani on the left.
Dan McKay on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. We're coming to you today from Capitol Hill, and we want to spend this segment talking about the general legislative session. Dan, you are a participant. Shereen and I are observers. But one of the things we observe is that special interests are providing a lot of funding to legislators' campaigns. I'm going to go through a little list. I won't say the amounts, but you've got the top donors of the Association of Realtors, the Utah Auto Dealers, Utah Hospital Association, Utah Bankers Association, Reagan Outdoor Advertising, Micron, Energy Solutions Pacific Corps, and the Home Builders Association of Utah. Big donors. Tell us, how does that play out here on Capitol Hill, Dan?
You know, I was, I'm not surprised that this is the list of folks that I guess pay off. I would look at...
I did that in rank order, I believe, yeah. You know, so the highest was the realtors.
But the interesting thing is, I guarantee it's a bipartisan giving, right? There's not, it's not one over the other. Uh-huh. And so, you know, it kind of goes both ways. And, you know, I think what you get is a lot of people who are really interested in making sure that policies are not passed that necessarily hurt them or their business model or whatever it might be, right? So they're interested.
Yeah, yeah, interesting. Shereen, what commentary would you have, especially his comment about it being bipartisan? If it's bipartisan, what's it doing? Yeah.
Yeah, so I think there's a bigger issue here. We actually could stand to see quite a bit of reform, I think, around campaign finance in our state. And I think that there is a desire for people to really understand and get some clear transparency around where people's money is going. Certainly if you have a PAC or C4 bringing in money, it's really hard to track that in our state. And I think we should see sort of a pro-democracy package that's really looking at those larger reforms. But, you know, people will say, and I think, you know, having been through this as a candidate as well, that those dollars don't necessarily buy influence. I think that it can go lots of ways, you know, and people who generally, I think, fund their campaigns or their especially when we see people who are unopposed or who are very safe districts raking in a lot of money from special interests, that bothers me. So I think that we should be looking at those that are more competitive. That's a place that is meaningful to me. Are people getting individual donors? I think those small dollar donors are really meaningful.
Yeah, yeah.
That is basically, hey, if you're listening to this and there's a politician you like, it probably isn't me. Look, send them 10, send them 20 bucks. With a little note saying, hey, thank for your service, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. I want to see
it will
there.
Go a long way.
Yeah,
Dan,
it really does.
You and I are in agreement on that, Shereen, agreement with you there. That's right where I was going to go, to just say that the crucible of an election is so painful, and the service that they provide and the impact on their families. And if you're not willing to step up and serve, step up and give.
Yeah.
So, okay, well, we'll
let's turn this into a telethon.
Yeah. Okay, so Dan, I've got a list here, but what's the most controversial bill on Capitol Hill right now?
Oh, the most controversial? It depends on which perspective you're looking at. Right now, I'm feeling like the session is kind of toned down a little bit.
Yeah.
Like there aren't the big fights that we usually
and we're in a pandemic, so maybe
for.
There's more grace.
Yeah.
We're not face to face. Maybe we're just not trying to do as much.
Yeah. And I think there is some of that where we're it's like, well, we could take this bill this far and let's dial it back from there, because the fight and getting everybody together to discuss an issue and try and bring the table is hard to set with everybody at it too. So, you know, we had less bills filed this year than we have the previous 2 years. So things are different, right?
Yeah.
I would say probably the most controversial is probably the billboard bill that's going on, right?
Okay.
That's a debate.
It allows any billboard company to take their billboards digital and not withstanding local
only
land use restrictions.
If local cities approve a billboard on a commercial center. So if, for example, and this is happening, you know, you set up a, hey, here's a 10 acre commercial site. They don't have a commercial user, but they're willing to, you know, call it out as commercial, and the city will give them the ability to put a billboard on that while they're waiting for a user to show up for that property. Well, when you do that, you're doing it to kind of favor the retail guy to help them, you know, keep their thing alive. But there are great technologies out there. You know, we heard about these in committees yesterday that actually mitigate the light. We've actually had a billboard installed down in my district. We worked with the developer on the thing, and it actually takes the light and points it down to the road. Uh-huh. And so the offensive billboard that used to, you know, that could face the neighborhood and is all bright white light, you know, that kind of thing, it's completely mitigated by pointing down at the road. And, you know, you've seen this at the mouth of Big Cottonwood Canyon, where there's actually a sunset, like this thing turns off at 10 o'clock, right? Those kinds of things are things that ought to be done with LED. And that's innovative, but it isn't great. The cities don't like it. And so there's
it's controversial. Shireen, yeah. I want to, since Dan brought up the billboard at the base of Big Cottonwood Canyon and that it sunsets at 10, what about people that just want to see their beautiful canyons that would like it to sunset permanently?
Is that you?
Well, I think that there's something to be said about the beautiful natural environment here, and that we ought to protect, quality.
Yeah. So I would be in favor of really having a much more restrictive approach to billboards across our state. I think when we look at the natural beauty that we have here, it's really unfortunate to have to drive by and see billboards for plastic surgery, like blocking mm-hmm. that view, right? But I also understand, again, we're talking about sort of special interests having an effect here. It's a difficult negotiation. I understand for lawmakers. I'm not sure it would be a difficult decision for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting.
The number one thing you can do is stop buying products that people see on billboards, because at the end of the day, that's how they support themselves. I mean, that's the issue. The other part of this too is, you know, cities, the counties, they can still condemn billboards. It's painful, but they can still do it. And if there's something that elected officials wanted to do in that direction, they could.
Let's stay on this rhythm, Dan, where I'm going to bring up a bill, you give a little commentary, and then we'll go to Shireen. But I'll go to you first, just as the person kind of living it here on the Hill. So the next one I want to go to is this attempt to have registration fees for electric hybrid cars be high, even the highest in the nation, with the idea that they got to pay their fair share and that they still have an incentive to use it. There's some that would argue that because these vehicles are not polluting the air, that we should be incentivizing more of them, not less of them.
You know, and that's probably a fair question. I haven't seen the bill. I've just heard, you know, kind of the media accounts of it. But what I can say is there is a fine balance between that incentive and, you know, and avoidance.
Fairness, yeah.
And fairness, right? So,
yeah. Shireen, you are an EV driver.
I am.
Yeah, tell us your perspective here.
Yeah, so I think it is a step in the wrong direction in terms of, I actually very much agree that there should be some version of fairness and we should have that understanding, but it should be clearly accounting what the full impact of also our gas vehicles are, right? When we think about, we have lots of data coming from the EU talking about what our air quality is doing in terms of the cost of healthcare and to personal families here, right? So thinking really holistically about this is important. And I also don't think being the highest in the nation is the right move for a state where we
have
kind
of bleeding edge
quality.
Yeah, yeah. Dan, how about the one, the bill that deals with protesting outside of people's residences? It's a Wilcox. It's HB 291. It would make targeted residential protests specifically directed or focused towards a residence a penalty that would have a fine.
Time, place, manner restrictions, First Amendment problems. I'll just say that I think that that bill is fraught with constitutional issues.
Wow.
If you have a road in front of your house that is public property, so is a sidewalk, I mean, you go down all those things. And being in the public venue is unfortunately a risk that we all take for having protesters, death threats, all kinds of craziness.
Yeah.
When people commit a crime, we stop them, but just recognize that's, I would prefer people not do it. Like,
yeah.
That's my thing.
Yeah, but
don't
you're
do
seeing,
it.
Yeah. I, as someone who's worked with a lot of elected officials, I feel like people that are elected to public office kind of sign up for some of this. But it did trouble me when there were protesters outside of Dr. Angela Dunn's home. Mm-hmm. Love to hear your comment there, Shireen. But, you know, she's a state epidemiologist. Like, did she sign up to have protesters outside her home?
Yeah, certainly not. I think there's actually very much agree with what Dan has said in terms of the problems here. But I do think that there's a larger question about how we are treating people who are in service, those who maybe aren't running for office. And I do think that was a real, a deeply troubling display of protest at Angela Dunn's home.
Yeah. Okay. We've got HB 113, Dan. This is Representative Brady Brammer, who is looking at having fathers pay 50% of pregnancy costs.
Yeah.
seems like a fair deal to me.
Well, yeah, I could see that perspective.
50 seemed like the right number.
I've been meaning to ask Representative Brammer, and it'd be interesting to have this conversation, right? I recently watched the Dave Chappelle show, and he talks in one of his stand-up comedy routines, which maybe he's joking, maybe he's not. But if as long as the Supreme Court says that it is a woman's body and it is her choice, you know, those kinds of things, mm-hmm. if she chooses, why, you know, again, I'm not saying I agree with this, but his point is that if she has the choice, why doesn't he have a choice on whether or not he gets to pay? Now, that's a very unpopular opinion that Dave expressed, but I think he brings up a valid question when you're talking about the choices everybody has in the arrangement.
Shireen, so, your response. I don't know if you're liking this setup, Shireen, but
for me, that's all.
Yeah, this is a little bit of a head scratcher for me. I think the issue is, you know, hearing the statement that he made was that he got kind of sick of this, like, oh, pro-life, pro-choice, and wanted to do something a little bit different. I think if you want to do something different, invest in comprehensive sex ed, invest in access to early childhood care, invest in ways that make it actually easier for people to make different decisions when it comes to this. Mm-hmm. I don't know that this is a really sound solution to a bigger problem.
Okay. All right. Dan, you know a lot about this, and there's a lot of backstory things, but I'll bring up my husband here. He hates the fact that people don't have to have vehicle inspections. He thinks it's impacting our safety. So Senator Karen Maine takes this bill, SB 93, requires just a small step towards inspections. She's basically saying when you're doing your vehicle emissions test, you also got to check whether the car lights and lamps are working and advise the driver of the findings. I mean, it's a pretty small step. But you said that it's already died up here.
Yeah, so Karen Maine circled it and is removing it from the reading calendar, which means it's dead for the year. The interesting thing is, as we go through the data, the primary safety-related issue is tires, right? So it's a visual inspection could solve that problem for most people, right? Uh-huh. But most people are not looking at their tires. Uh-huh. In fact, I went out and looked at my car this morning and saw that my tire was a little bit off. Guess what the least leading cause is of accidents? Headlights. Mm-hmm. So the interesting part about the safety bill is it was aimed at like adding a headlight inspection, and maybe next year it was going to be, you know, a blinker fluid mm-hmm. inspection. So what I would say is the data that we have from Highway Patrol actually shows that in this last year in 2020, deaths from safety related incidents went down by half. Now, so did our traffic, right? So I don't really put a lot of stock in that. But guess what did go up significantly?
Deaths.
Accidents as a relate of driver distraction. It is still the deaths, driver is the problem in our vehicles.
Deaths are way up too.
And deaths are up as well.
And they're way up because of speeds. Not as much people.
100 mile an hour drivers, those kinds of things. So all of those things are big problems. But the safety of the vehicle is actually a decreasing percentage of our accidents.
I serve on the Transportation Commission.
Will you tell Chris so he feels better?
I will. I serve on the Transportation Commission of the state, and we get our safety briefings at each meeting, and it's been really alarming what's been happening with speeds.
Yeah, I think I'm really with you on this distracted driver issue. I think if we're asking people to do things as a action step from this is check your tires, don't drive distracted, and make a donation to a candidate you care about.
Yeah, and you know, honestly, if you really want to think about it, go get your emissions inspections at a tire shop.
Right.
Because a tire shop is going to have the ability to fix your tires if you got a problem.
Yeah.
Instead
yeah.
of an emissions shop, they might miss that.
That's often a very expensive investment for families, and I understand that. But yeah, tires are definitely a big issue.
We have just under 2 minutes left in the program. Let's just take the last 2 minutes and talk about what the future holds, our state's economy, politics, the coronavirus. I'll go first by just saying, as an economist, I'm telling people that we will see a rebound by mid to late summer. And I'm saying that because of vaccinations in arms. I'm saying it because of pent-up demand. I heard an analyst the other day say, when you've got so much stuff backed up behind the dam, when it breaks, it comes. And so I want people to continue to be really careful following the health guidance, but to have some hope that we are getting through this. So Shireen, let's go to you first, since we've been going down first.
Sure.
And just give your take on the next few months. Maybe something good to say.
Yeah, so I've got a couple things. I think one, the thing that I'm very concerned about, of course, are the variants. I think when we're seeing this extreme spread really kicking up in places around the country, that is a driver.
Yeah.
We're likely to see that here as well. And so I think even though now we're in a little bit of a respite, our positivity rate is still a little high. But generally, I think people are, you know, taking a lot of responsibility. I hope they keep that up. It's so important right now. The other thing that I want to add is a totally different piece, but the UMFA right now has Black Refractions, which is a exhibition that has over 100 works from 1920s, the studio museum in Harlem. It's Black History Month. If you can, go ahead and see it.
That's neat, up on the University of Utah campus. Dan, finish us out.
I hope that everybody will abandon their social media accounts and spend time with their families instead of scrolling through their timelines. And I am hopeful that Tim Cook, who is a very bright and visionary takeover for Apple computers, his push on privacy, I'm hoping will be the beginning of the end of our addiction to social media. There you go.
I love it. You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle with Shireen Gorbani, Dan McKay, Natalie Gochner. Program is produced by Anthony Scoma. Thanks so much, everyone.